Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to today's program. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. It's always great to have you along. Looking forward to a good hour ahead. And I want to say hey to Ryan, sitting at the controls again. So
good day, sir. It's good to see you.
This is going to be a topic you should enjoy, I would think.
Well, I enjoy every day on
really?
Connecting Faith.
Okay, good. That was you read that just like I wrote it, so thank you for that. We're going to start out with a little quiz. I don't know if you know, summer school is in session now.
I've heard about that.
Yeah,
the students hard at work. And
So this is a quiz. In fact, our guest today is a professor, is teaching a summer session. So
fantastic.
This is a true and false question.
For me?
Yes, true or false. It is good to be connected at all times.
False.
Well, we'll find out. I'm not going to give you the answers.
Oh.
You know, the good thing about this, we're talking technology today, and the good thing about talking technology is that the essay questions are only 140 characters, so it's super.
That's a Twitter joke. Well done.
Trying to show that I, can relate minimally.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Detweiler is my guest today. He's an author, award-winning filmmaker and cultural commentator. And he's been featured on all the major media outlets, professor of communication and director of the Center for Entertainment, Media, and Culture at Pepperdine University in Malibu, California. And right away you're saying, is there any studying going on if they're in Malibu, California? Which is maybe the better question we should ask. Craig is the author of Into the Dark, Seeing the Sacred in the Top Films of the 21st Century, co-author of A Matrix of Meanings and editor of Halos and Avatars.
Oh, man.
And the new one that we're going to reference is called iGods, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives. It's from Brazos Press. And Craig is actually talking to us from London today, where he's doing a little summer teaching session. Craig, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. Honored to be here.
So do we are all the essay questions actually 140 characters or less?
It'd be easier to grade them. That's for sure.
Yes, it would. So, all right. Well, maybe we'll start with is there an answer to the true or false question? It's good to be connected at all times, because that's sort of, literally we are, with technology, connected. The world is at our fingertips.
Well, and it's certainly a new bit of status update, right, that we could access and solve questions and get answers at almost any time. We can do a Google search on our phones and get an answer back really, really fast, whether that's a Bible verse or you want to know, some fact about life. But in midst of all this facts and all this information, I think we still need wisdom, which is always elusive and worth seeking out.
Hmm. I was just thinking, as you're talking about that, looking up online every time my kids are together and we're talking about something, my son-in-law, I mentioned something, and right away he's on his phone. He's looking it up. We're kind of going, well.
Google is our way of ending arguments or solving,
It's kind of become that way. Now, did you? You're talking about technology, and this it's a substantive book with a lot. And I know it came out of some classes that you're teaching, but is this something that, as a professor in communications, it just was sort of a natural for you to kind of dive into this, or was it something maybe more personal?
Well, it's both professional and personal. I mean, as a teacher, as an educator, as pastors, everybody who's in front of an audience is dealing with this electronic distraction that everybody has in their hands. So it's very hard to capture people's undivided attention. It's one of the rarest things in the world at this point to really be face-to-face and not have a screen between us and another person. So I saw it with our students' lives. I saw how distracted and harried they were. And then I experienced it in my own family. I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old They both have, cell phones. And so what do I do with a world in which they can access all kinds of information and all kinds of websites? And so I came to the subject of technology out of genuine personal concern of what does it mean to be a parent in a digital age, and how should we teach and preach in an age of electronic distractions?
Would it bother you if you knew that Ryan was checking his phone and his email right now while we're doing the show?
Not true.
It would be utterly typical.
Sure.
So I would just say, hello, Ryan, yes.
That's not true. He is not actually. He's fully engaged.
He can live tweet this. It's fine.
Sure.
He can put it all
sure.
out there.
We in fact, we do actually tweet live during the show. So, Grace does. I have no idea how she does it, but she does it well. So let's talk. One of the things that early on in the book, you make this suggestion that Jesus was a techie. Explain that.
Well, we've all heard, of course, that Joseph was a carpenter. And we just assume then, well, Jesus was surrounded by tools and woodworking and shop materials. But that word for carpenter, the Greek word, is actually tekton, which is where we get that word for techne and for technology. It's the same Greek word. And so if we were to translate it today, maybe there's a different way of understanding what it means that Joseph was a tekton and Jesus was the son of a tekton. Maybe we'd think of him more as a builder or as an engineer, as an architect, or even as a techie. Rather than thinking of him as maybe someone who's in the front of the church, maybe we should think of him as somebody who'd be in the back with the tech crew, with the lighting crew, like Ryan behind the board.
Sure.
Ryan, you and Jesus have a lot in common, perhaps.
That's tremendous.
I suspect there's many, many more commonalities, which would be a whole nother show. And you talk about technology and divine revelation. Are they related? Are there some lessons we can learn there?
Well, we think of God obviously as creator, but perhaps we could also think of God as the original technologist. When he created the world, he was separating light from darkness. He was separating the water from the land. He was bringing order to chaos. And that's essentially what an engineer or a technologist does. They try to organize information, present it so it's not in a chaotic manner. They try to take something crazy like the internet that has so many rabbit trails and say, how do we find our way through this? How do we provide a map? And so I believe in a sense that God was offering us a roadmap, not just in our brain, but in our ability to create and engineer, to build bridges, to build roads, to connect with other people. And in a sense, the internet is a new form of road, a new form of bridge, a way of crossing a divide.
Interesting, as we'll talk a little bit more about theology and technology, I guess, but you brought us back to the Genesis creation account and, the mandate to be fruitful and multiply, but it seems like we perhaps missed that second part or haven't done that so well, that the exercising dominion or subduing the earth, as it were.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's interesting. Most of the internet problems we have are that we've been too fruitful. We've done too much multiplication. There's too many websites. We couldn't find anything. Or even the fact that we have so much music or so much entertainment that we don't know what to do with all of it. So the internet's richest people have gotten there by organizing our problems of abundance, our problems of too much. So if you have too many books and you don't know how to find things, where do you go? You go to Amazon. If you have too much information, you don't know, where to find something on the internet, you go to Google. And if you don't know what to do with all your friends and all your relationships, you can kind of find everybody on Facebook. And so all these billion-dollar companies started by solving our problems of abundance, of too much fruitfulness. And so I think the question of stewardship, of how we replenish the earth, not just take from it, how we plant as well as harvest, those problems of abundance and how we sustain ourselves, those problems in Genesis are still very much with us today.
Mentioned abundance. You have several key words starting with A. Let's review some of those. Access, one of the areas where technology has, as we alluded to right at the beginning, it has given us access to virtually everything.
Well, that's right. And even the ability, you know, in closed countries where the gospel maybe couldn't get to China or in Iran or Pakistan. Well, now with technology, things can be, in a sense, broadcast right over the walls. Everybody has access with a smartphone. In the most remote country, you can have access to all the world's great collected, you know, wisdom and literature across history. So we have so much power in our pocket. It's rather staggering.
Another word that you address in the book is aesthetics, and I hadn't really thought about that, but expound on that a bit.
Well, yes. There's, I think, maybe a reason why Apple has become such a valuable company. And it's not just that they are making things easier, but that they're doing it in a beautiful way. Their devices are beautiful. They actually care about how our fingers move across the screen. They care about the presentation. So in a sense, I think they're bringing beauty to technology, which can be a little bit of a dehumanizing thing, right, to have just a device in your pocket. And yet Apple has made it beautiful. And in a sense, I think they have gone back to the garden a little bit and understood that in the beginning, God made things beautiful. He made things lovely. He made things pleasing to the eye. And so I think Steve Jobs and Apple kind of recovered that sense of design that God put into things, and they sort of tapped into that creative glory, whether they knew the creator or not. They were reflecting, I think, the aesthetics of God.
So is technology a suitable helpmeet for us, going back to the garden?
Well, it's now kind of our closest companion. I know, you know, most of us, particularly my students, you know, they wake up in the morning, check their email first thing. At night, they might post a status update before they sign off. So it is the thing that is that phone is on us at all times. It is our most constant companion. And in a sense, it almost responds like God, where we can ask it a question and we can always get an answer. We ask Siri for something, you know, in the Apple universe, and Siri will give us an answer. I think the danger is when we start to confuse that omnipresence of a cell phone in our pocket with the omnipresence and the omniscience of God.
We're addressing that today in our discussion and in the book, iGods, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives. It's new, out from Craig Detweiler. Craig is my guest today. Craig's an author, award-winning filmmaker, cultural commentator, and he is a professor of communication and director of the Center for Entertainment, Media, and Culture at Pepperdine University. We've got some four copies of the book to give away, and would love to have you join the conversation. And you can, I suppose you could send us something on Facebook, right? You could send us a question that way.
You sure could. My Faith Radio on Facebook.com.
All right, My Faith Radio on Facebook.com. You could use email, go to MyFaithRadio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can send us a note that way. Or if, you know, if you're kind of an old-fashioned person like me and you just want to pick up the phone, you can do that too at 877-933-2484. As long as we still have the phone, I mean, it hasn't been replaced yet, you can give us a call and talk to Grace and we'll get you on. We'll talk technology, how technology shapes our spiritual and social lives. If you've got some personal experiences in it or wonder about some advice on how you can maybe manage it better in your life and family, join the conversation, 877-933-2484. More in a moment.
Helping you grow deeper in your faith.
Are you ready for a new way to seek justice? An ancient way to know God? I'm Susie Larson. On the next Live the Promise, I'm honored to talk with Jim Martin of International Justice Mission. He's written a new book titled The Just Church. IJM is an expert at not only rescuing victims of violence, sex trafficking, slavery, and oppression, but also at bringing churches into the fight. We'll learn how to seek justice in a way that moves beyond words and good intentions.
Live the Promise with Susie Larson. Weekdays from 3 to 4.
To live by faith means to put God first. We at Faith Radio are committed to helping you grow deeper in your walk of faith. So we hope you'll boldly commit to live by faith by signing up to receive your Live by Faith wristband today. You can find it on our website at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. It is the Live by Faith wristband, and it's yours free for the asking. Again, myfaithradio.com.
What are we learning through technology, and are we, in fact, learning to more effectively be light in today's dark world? Talking about it in a new book called iGods, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives, and it's written by Professor Craig Detweiler, who is an author and a filmmaker, cultural commentator. He's a professor of communication and director of the Center for Entertainment, Media, and Culture at Pepperdine University. He's written a couple of books. We're talking to him today, actually, from London, where he's doing some summer course teaching. And you know, not long ago, he was in China as well doing a course there. So we'll get some perspective maybe on both England and China and the U.S., maybe in terms of technology. But I'm interested, Craig, does technology make us impatient? I mean, are there some characteristics that technology seems to bring out in us?
Well, it's funny that we expect to get immediate answers, and yet, you know, the Bible talks about asking and seeking and knocking, and that's almost like an old-fashioned virtue at this point, because we're used to a Google search to, you know, give us millions of results in milliseconds. And so, you know, seeking God, that takes time. That takes, you know, real thoughtfulness, and maybe it's not an immediate response that you're going to get to prayer and to some of these questions and you know, seeking God's will. That's something that takes a while to discern. And so I think we do have a real problem in the fast-paced technological world with being patient and learning to sit and being still and knowing that He is God.
And seems like the faster the technology gets, the more impatient we become, right? If we have to wait 2 seconds for the phone to connect, or
yeah, and it's a little bit shocking, I think, how much we expect others to respond in the same way. You know, when parents text their kids, they expect them to respond, even if the kid might be in class. And if they don't respond, they might go into a tailspin and panic and think, oh, what's wrong with my kid? Well, maybe your kid has actually put their phone down for 10 minutes so they could actually listen and figure out a problem that's on the board, or take some notes, or even be involved in an exam. So we expect immediate responses for our complaints. We expect immediate responses to our texts. And life doesn't always work at the pace that our cell phones do.
Hmm. We've been talking a little bit about some of those key words. We talked about access and aesthetics, so kind of Apple and their emphasis on aesthetics. We sort of touched on abundance, but I know you spent some time talking abundance and looking at Amazon. Just talk a bit more about how they have changed, you know, the way we live in many ways.
Well, it is amazing. What started as a book business now will bring us almost any product, and even overnight. You know, by the time we order it or wish that we could have it, it's almost at our doorstep. With the new Amazon Prime service, you know, Jeff Bezos has even talked about Amazon in the future having drone service, where you'd almost get a personal basket that would be fly to your house. And it's as if Santa Claus has been fulfilled, where you say, I would love this, and it's almost dropped right through our chimney. So they've helped us, I think, deal with the abundance of choices, the ability to search online and see how many products are out there and choose one in particular, but they've also been so immediate in their service and their ability to deliver in a timely manner that it's made us all into expert online shoppers.
And, of course, had, you know, interesting impact economically, I guess, in mom-and-pop stores and all those kinds of things. I mean, they've really changed the way business is done.
Oh, it's been a really tough, I think, for Christian booksellers, and because everybody's used to the most efficient. A Christian bookseller in the old days, you might have gone to the store and they say, well, I don't have it in stock, but I can get it here in a week. You know, well, Amazon can deliver it to me overnight. So why do I want to go to the store? I'm going to stay at home and wait for the book to come to me. So everybody now is sort of forced to compete with Amazon's way of doing business. And again, it's turned us all into shoppers. I feel like we're now always shopping for a better church or always shopping for an easier alternative. And discipleship doesn't necessarily work that way. It's about more of a long road in the same direction. An obedient, movement, and that takes time. Something we're not used to.
The more we use these technologies, I mean, as we said, even in terms of impatience, I mean, it feeds our consumer mentality, whether we really intend for that or not. Right? We become shoppers. Our expectations become increased. Right?
Well, that's right, because. In the old days, networks that they kind of pushed things towards us. You know, you'd send a message out maybe via just a few of the networks, and now in a sense we pull everything towards us. It's no longer pushed at us, but we pull it towards us. We say, "I want this, I want that," and so we kind of have the power, the ability to draw things in through a device that's in our pocket. So anytime a whim strikes our fancy and we say, I wonder about that. I wonder if that's available. When could I get that? What are the choices right now? We have limitless choices in our hands. And that is a power that, King Henry VIII didn't enjoy in England, right? We have more access to information and technology and medicine and food and health than he ever had in his lifetime. So in a sense, we've all become kings of our own making, that these eye gods in our pockets have allowed us to kind of make ourselves the center of our own universe.
Well, another A word that we want to talk about, algorithms, because there's a relationship there as well. And in that you discuss Google, but talk about how, if we become shoppers, some of those decisions are being made for us, right?
Well, that's right. You see it on Amazon when you buy something, they now know what you're interested in, and they will maybe, send you more recommendations in the same arena because they're doing algorithmic equations and saying, I think this is what you're interested in. Well, let me tell you more about that area. Maybe some trip that you want to take. If you searched one time for London, you're suddenly going to get all these offers about London and what's available in London. Google does the same thing. They key into the searches that you've made, and they say, well, if they want a certain kind of camera, or they're an art student and they're interested in art, let's send them art supplies, let's send them art products, let's send them all kinds of ads focused on that. And that's all done by algorithm. And so our decision-making, to some degree, is driven by algorithms that we don't even realize are targeting who we are online.
Well, of course, by the very nature of a decision, we say yes to something and no to something else. So, we don't even have the opportunity to say no any longer, though, right? I mean, because it's already being said no for us.
Well, that's right. It creates a filter so that we don't realize that maybe our news is being filtered in a certain way, or the things that we search for have already been a little bit decided based on our prior search history. In a sense, Google knows far more about us than we know about Google. That we're leaving digital footprints all over the internet, and we don't realize that these companies could actually trace these things. It's nice that Google has a slogan, which is "Don't be evil." That's what they, as a company, say. We want to don't be evil, and yet you consider the power that they have—the ability to filter our searches and to drive algorithms in our decision making—and it's somewhat unprecedented how much power is concentrated in just a few companies.
We're going to talk more about how we apply wisdom to these circumstances when. Google or Amazon decides for us, and we're going to talk more about how we can, as followers of Christ, allow God's truth to take ownership in this area of technology. How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives is the subtitle of a new book called Eye Gods from Craig Detweiler. We've got four copies to give away. You can sign up for that by giving us a call at 877-933-2484. We'll do a little drawing at the end of the show, 877-93-FAITH. Or if it's more convenient, you can drop us a note online, myfaithradio.com. Go to the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there. Or Facebook, myfaithradio.com/Facebook.
Search My Faith Radio on Facebook.com.
It's pretty simple from what what I hear. Back with Craig Detweiler in just a moment. So long, self, and it's been fun, but I have found somebody else. So long, self, there's just no room for two, so you are gonna have to move. So long, self, I'll take this road, but you are wrong for me. Farewell, farewell, goodbye, don't cry. Was that So Long Selfies? No, no. If they would have written it here, probably. In the last year, it might have been there. We're talking about technologies and how technology shapes our spiritual and social lives. The book we're referencing is called iGods. It's from Craig Detweiler. Craig is an author, award-winning filmmaker, cultural commentator, and he is professor of communication and director of the Center for Entertainment, Media, and Culture, Pepperdine University. And we're talking a little bit about technology and all that. And you know, speaking of self, I guess we could talk a little bit about selfies. There's YouTube, all these things that are pretty me-focused. Is that part of man's search for meaning that this is just a way to try and find expression of that?
Well, it's interesting. They call, Twitter and Facebook, they call them social media platforms. And, what does a platform do? Well, it elevates us. It takes us a little bit higher. It's interesting, if you look back into Scripture, particularly into Genesis, there was another platform that was built in Babel, right? The Tower of Babel was an early platform that was intended to kind of elevate, a people. I think God really continues to ask us that question in our social media use is who and what is being elevated, who and what is being lifted up or celebrated. The word selfie itself, right, sort of suggests who's being lifted up. YouTube, right, says broadcast yourself. So we do have an unprecedented ability to put ourselves out there. I guess the question is, where is God in the midst of that? Are we bringing God with us? Is God before us? Is God behind us? Is God even in the conversation? I certainly hope so.
Hmm. Well, and the challenge to one of the lines caught my attention. Through technology, we lie to our friends through Facebook, and we tell the truth to strangers through Twitter. I mean, that's kind of a sobering assessment here, but it seems pretty accurate.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, with Facebook, you have new words and new categories being created, things like the underbrag on Facebook, where you're really kind of talking about like, hey, look at my amazing grandson, or guess what my kids did, or look at this picture of our vacation. And yet you can't quite brag about it, so you kind of try to underplay it and say like, so proud of my son, which is lovely. That's what we all do. But in a sense, it's like we're always pulling out the pictures that used to just reside in our wallet, and now we're posting them on Facebook at almost all times.
And, is that that's not always a bad thing, is it?
No, it's not. But it's beautiful to share our lives, right, and to share our celebrations. But it's interesting, research is just being discovered on how Facebook actually might depress us when we are spending a lot of time on Facebook, reading other people's posts and looking at their pictures of vacation and reading about their kids' accomplishments. We sometimes feel worse about ourselves after spending time on Facebook. And I think as Christians, we need to think a little more about the audience that is actually maybe listening to our posts and sort of say, well, does this glorify myself or is this a chance for me to kind of reach out to others and care for them, ask how they're doing, and not just be always talking about how wonderful my life is or how great, my backyard is compared to yours. So that old thing of comparison, I think it can sneak in subtle ways in social media.
And I guess at the same time, though, if we simply want to use it as a tool to share faith, that, you know, we probably don't do that well if we've, you know, it just becomes sort of trite, right? I'm discipling, 500 people because I post a verse once in a while.
Right. Well, I think this question of digital discipleship, it's really a new question. How do you love someone online? Someone may express a prayer concern online. Well, it's great to click like or write a little note and say, I'm praying for you. That's a beautiful thing. But maybe we also need to recover that old thing of actually maybe going over to someone's house or picking up the phone and calling them and really asking for a larger conversation. So that casual interaction that we might happen on Facebook or Twitter, hopefully it has a physical prompt to us as well, where we say, maybe I need to take over a cup of soup for that person who's sick, or maybe they need a hug, or maybe they need someone to take them out and just have a cup of coffee and listen to have a conversation face to face for an hour. It maybe takes more than just clicking a like button on Facebook.
By the way, you like to join the conversation? We would like you to do that. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Talking with Craig Detweiler today. One of the terms, I don't know if I was familiar with, but called slacktivism. Describe that and maybe some of its limitations sort of fits in what we're talking about here.
Well, that's right. There's so many different causes out there and so many people trying to raise awareness. And I think it's easy on Facebook to join a group and say, I'm part of the 3 million people who cares about something. But, you know, in the old days, you actually had to do a little bit more than just click on a button to join a group. You might need to actually give money. You might need to actually give time and volunteer. So Facebook has made it easy for us to join groups, but it also may have given us a false impression that somehow joining is enough. And so slacktivism is sort of a term that refers to maybe this ability to think that, social media activism is sufficient to really change things when sometimes it requires a little more, again, physical presence and actually sacrificing time, money, resources, all those things that we can tithe our time and our talents and our energy towards.
It's interesting, though, you're talking about social media's activism and influence. I mean, obviously, we watched the Arab Spring kind of unfold a lot of that through social media, right? You spent some time in China where there's, I guess I'd be interested in your perspective. I mean, can we assume that social media is going to overturn tyrants or bring about reform?
Well, the great news about social media is that it's very hard for any one entity or government to control it. And so whether we're talking about Iran or maybe Syria or China, you can get reports from, in a sense, everyday citizens. Anyone with a cell phone might have the ability to record atrocities or record human rights abuses, to actually post something for the entire world to see. So we see in Egypt or, throughout the Arab Spring, we saw the ability of people to organize despite the government's ability of trying to maybe suppress democracy and suppress freedom. Twitter and Facebook do give us an ability to come together and to crowdsource in remarkable ways. But I also discovered in China, it also gives the government abilities to monitor your activities as well. They can create, in a sense, a digital firewall. They call it the Great Firewall of China. And they don't allow Facebook. They don't allow Twitter and some of the freedom that we enjoy here, freedom of speech. They actually restrict that. So they understand, I think, the power of social media for organizing against tyranny.
You know, and there's the idea of sending Google not troops. I mean, I guess we should probably keep promoting, right, the use of social media because it does bring about, reveal truth, perhaps, right? I mean, we see the videos of martyrs in Iran or whatever it might be.
Well, that's right. It gives everybody a voice, and it empowers people in unprecedented ways, and that's the positive side. of social media. It allows people to maybe not be abused, but to stand up and say, I'm here and I matter, and to say I'm not alone. One of the most active countries for Facebook use is actually Saudi Arabia. And people share a great deal of their life on Facebook, perhaps because they're not allowed to share it as broadly in their public spheres in their country.
I was thinking about, Grayson mentioned too, the Twitter activism that led CNN mainstream media to cover the Kermit Gosnell trial. I mean, that was a case where there was, the issue wouldn't go away.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, and in fact, the traditional mainstream media has been undermined by social media to some degree, that people can organize and say, we care about this. Why aren't you covering this issue? And that is unprecedented. The power, it's a democratizing force. Social media really does have an ability for people to find each other and to connect with each other. In some ways, it harkens back to the way the church was, the early Christians were kind of a democratizing force in Rome. They kind of undercut the authority of the Roman Empire because of Christians' ability to connect with each other around faith.
Well, Craig, I've just been kind of reflecting on the term community as I've heard what you've had to say today, and I've seen some really compelling studies about the community that Facebook creates and the impact that it has on the social lives of so many of us. And for my generation, I think there's maybe a question that we'd have for you would be, how do we find the proper place where we're using the power that Facebook can be in our social lives and yet still developing relationships really face to face?
Well, you're right, Ryan. Far more people are in relationship on social media out of their real life. I mean, we have some virtual friends. We have online friends. We do have some of those people we've only met in kind of a Facebook or Twitter kind of way. But the vast majority of people are people that we do meet every day. So it's an easy way to keep up with people. It's an easy way to start a prayer chain. It's an easy way to crowdsource and say there's a need for somebody lost their job and they need money, or somebody needs a place to stay. It's a great way to respond to physical needs. But at the end of the day, you do need to physically care for each other. And with communion, right, we have the actual, bread and wine. That's physical. With baptism, right? That's actual water. That's something you can't baptize yourself. You can't administer communion to yourself. You need to do it in community. And I think that's what we have to continue to maintain, is that physical presence with each other. It's not enough just to know each other online, but we need to know each other face to face.
And we'll talk more about if there's some practical steps, some guidelines. We also want to talk a little bit more about church and maybe if technology has become an alternate religion. We'll get to that and more with Craig Detweiler, who is a professor of communication and director of the Center for Entertainment, Media, and Culture at Pepperdine University. He's written a new book called iGods, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives. And we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. It's 877-933-2484, or you can connect with us online, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page for the email link, and we'll continue with our discussion in just a moment.
Here's what's coming up on the next Faith Radio Mornings.
On Wednesday's Faith Radio Mornings, God designed men to be free to think creatively and to turn that creativity into reality. But many middle-aged men find themselves wondering if they actually are a man. We'll hear from John Sowers as he shares from his book, The Heroic Path, In Search of the Masculine Heart.
And at 7:40, we welcome back our friends, parenting experts, John and Kendra Smiley. They'll examine the dangers of being the sports parent.
It all starts at 6 a.m. on Wednesday's Faith Radio Mornings.
One day, your home will be filled with glorious music lifting your spirits to new heights. That day begins with this day, the day you register for the University of Northwestern Academy of Music. Classes are for all ages and abilities, taught in a Christian setting by Northwestern students and faculty. Solo, individual, and select group lessons are available, as well as our vibrant youth choir, unwsp.edu. University of Northwestern. St. Paul. Your life on purpose.
It's 46 past the hour, and talking today about technology with Craig Detweiler, nationally known writer and speaker on media issues, getting a Christian perspective on navigating today's social media culture. We've been getting a historic look at where we've been, a prophetic look at where we're headed, and helping us sort out the immediate from the eternal. Eye Gods is the name of the book, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives. And Craig, we've been talking a little bit about, you know, how some of these challenges are before us in terms of technology. I want to focus a bit on wisdom as we go along. I was thinking back to our conversation a little bit earlier about Google sort of or Amazon deciding for us. How do we begin to apply wisdom in these circumstances when, you know, our even though our choices are endless, they've sort of been limited by the algorithms?
Well, that's right. It's funny, you know, even a service like eHarmony has helped so many people find each other. And eHarmony is run by Christians, a Christian psychologist from Fuller Seminary created it. And yet the algorithms of eHarmony are helping people find, you know, husbands and wives. In the old days, we would have said, well, that's the will of God. And I think it still is the will of God. But it's interesting that God is using, you know, the algorithms of eHarmony to help people find suitable helpers. It's very surprising and shocking. But in a world of so many choices, so many relationships, so many possibilities, it is helpful for computers to kind of say, have you considered this college, or have you considered this career, or have you considered this person? We're used to thinking in terms of abundance rather than, we're used to thinking about scarcity, and yet I think we're discovering that there's so much abundance in how much God has provided for us, and technology is helping us sort through that abundance.
To have that abundance mentality can make a big difference in how we live and act.
That's right. That's right. Well, even you think back to Jesus and his early miracles where, you know, the disciples said, hey, we don't have enough food. And what does Jesus say? He says, well, what do you have in your hand? They said, well, we've got some loaves and some fish. And he says, well, let's start with that. And they realized actually that was more than enough. There was baskets overflowing once God was added to that equation. So it is a big shift, but I think an important one to switch from scarcity to abundance in our thinking.
Talk a bit about how churches, maybe if there's some guidelines, how church can use technology. I know you referenced the video countdown before the service. That's probably not the ideal preparation for worship, is it? But that's sort of, I mean, that, you know, we're into using technology, just want to use it wisely.
Right. Well, I think that the temptation, I think, with churches is that in the midst of an electronic age, the temptation is to be kind of bigger, louder, and faster. And yet I'm not sure that that's the what we truly need. It could be that a slower church service, a church service that unplugs us, that makes time feel like it's going slowly rather than quickly. That may be what we need in kind of a hyper-accelerated world. So I believe in the power of maybe counter-programming, of not trying to outdo the iGods with our own technology, but to turn it around and try to say, hey, in your distracted world, let's turn off the phones for this hour. Let's take an electronic Sabbath together. Maybe take an electronic Sabbath as a family. Spend the whole day without your devices and see how your face-to-face interactions, both with each other and with God, may deepen your life and expand your sense of peace.
Has that happened for you? I mean, I know you spent some time teaching in China, and I know there are some restrictions there. So did that make a difference maybe in your technology use?
Well, that's exactly right. You know, a self-imposed Sabbath from Facebook actually was healthy for me. You know, China didn't allow it. And I realized that, well, okay, maybe I missed some updates. I missed the news of a few people and their lives. But overall, with that extra time that I wasn't spending online, I was spending more time with my family. We were having more conversations. We were, you know, in a circle, in a room together, not just looking at our devices, but actually looking at each other. And so that electronic break, I think, strengthened our bonds as family really trying to care for each other and be in active, loving relationships with each other.
So how would that, how does your time in China contrast maybe with your time in London or even back in Southern California?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The internet speeds are certainly very fast in the Western world. In London, Korea's internet speeds are phenomenal. And so I think we're dealing with this accelerated age where we can be reached at any time. I find that my students feel stressed out because they're constantly being interrupted. It's hard for them to get 10 uninterrupted minutes to really concentrate on something. I had the designer for my book was a young man. He did some great design work on the book, and he said he almost never is separated from his phone other than when he's playing volleyball, and that's when he feels, in a sense, sometimes most connected to God because he's free in that moment and not tethered to this device. So that off switch, I think, can be an important thing. We might need to power down in order to power up.
So is technology sort of become our alternate religion? I mean, is it at that sort of status?
Well, when you feel such attachment to your phone that you can't measure, you know, imagine living life without it. When it's the first thing that we talk to or interact with in the morning, when it's the last thing that we sign off with at night. In the old days, you know, we used to order our day, right, via devotion, via prayer. We'd start the day on our knees and end the day on our knees. Well, now we might start our day texting and end our day texting. And I'm not sure that's sustainable for a healthy life with God. I'm not sure that I should turn to the crowd and see what all kinds of status everybody else is seeking. But should I maybe, you know, tap into the ultimate power source first? How do I carve out time for God at the beginning and end of my day? How do I push pause and engage in prayer rather than just another Twitter update instead?
Well, Craig, you started out the show and made the comment that Jesus was a techie. I wonder, and not to be provocative, but I honestly wonder what you'd think. If Jesus was here with us today, if his ministry was today, do you think he would use social media, and how would he use it?
That is a great question, Ryan. You know, it's interesting how much of Jesus' teaching is actually kind of Twitter-sized. You think of the Beatitudes, right? Very short, very pithy, and very powerful statements. One of the reasons maybe why his teaching was able to be disseminated so easily was that it's very compact. It's very powerful. His parables have these great twists at the end that I think capture our imagination, and they're easy to tell. So I do believe that Jesus' gospel is portable in that sense. It is easily translatable across these various mediums. But I do feel, right, like you look at Jesus's public ministry, and while he spent time with the crowd, I could see him being involved with social media. He also understood that sometimes you have to move away from the crowd. Sometimes you have to, you know, go to the other side of the lake and spend some time just face-to-face with the Father. And that's where I feel like we may be too tempted by our devices, that we feel like we can't be alone just with God, but have to have that update, that text right beside us. So I think that's the challenge for your generation, is to continue to carve out time to be alone with God in the same way that Jesus did.
Just thinking about the issue of mystery as well. I mean, that not everything is in 140 character answers, right? I mean, isn't that part of it? I mean, that, you know, talk about sort of there's a bigger, louder, faster, but there also, as you said, you know, slowing down, and there was mystery and things, not everything was fully defined and explained. Or revealed.
I think that's right. And I think that perhaps on the other side of a Google universe where everything is explained or searchable, where you can look at every pinpoint, every star in the sky by holding up your cell phone, the allure of mystery, of the ineffable, of the spirit, I think that still remains and will continue to drive the next generation. They have plenty of facts. And they have all kinds of access, but I think they still want something that is beautiful, that is wonderful, that is awe-inspiring. And technology has drained a lot of the awe out of the world, And I think that hopefully the church can recover that sense of awe and wonder and mystery and beauty.
Our awe is centered on newer, faster, and smaller, right?
Right. Well, that's it, right? That we kind of attach a certain magic to these devices. And perhaps we need to recover the magic of community.
Oh, we
magically,
his time is up, huh? So, calling from London, where you have to stick a half pence in the phone to get the connection. Apparently,
one of those sweet red phone booths.
Sure,
he must have been right outside the Houses of Parliament.
And if the bobbies maybe just outside that don't carry weapons, but maybe they carry coins, you can.
Or a cell phone.
He can make a connection again. Let's try and get a closing comment, if we can, from Craig Detweiler, who is talking to us from London today, where he is in the midst of a summer teaching program, and we'll connect with him. Craig, we lost you there for a minute. We got just time for a closing word. Appreciate you coming on today with us.
Well, Neil, Ryan, Grace, I just appreciate the opportunity. I feel like the influence of technology is growing so rapidly that we do need to pause and reflect deeply, spiritually, theologically about these devices and figure out how to put them in their proper perspective, in their proper place.
Well, it was a pretty effective illustration by you just hanging up the phone there for a minute.
I don't know what happened.
Didn't really quite expect that, but that was fine.
It was mysterious.
So, yes. Well, sure. Yeah. And we were just talking about mysteries. So there still are some mysteries, I guess, even with technology.
That's right.
Craig, blessings to you. I hope that this this text provided some great discussion in your classroom and for the rest of us as we read it. It's good to connect with you today.
Thank you so much, Neil, and thank you for creating a forum like Connecting Faith. It's been wonderful.
Craig Detweiler, author and filmmaker, cultural commentator. He's professor of communication and director of the Center for Entertainment, Media, and Culture at Pepperdine University. The book we've been referencing today is called iGods, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives, and it's out from Brazos Press. It's a division of Baker Publishing. You can catch the program if you missed part of it. And there's a minute, of course, that we all miss together. You can catch it online at myfaithradio.com and then click on Connecting Faith. It's myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about immigration and get some great discussion here at noon on Connecting Faith.